As the news of coronavirus reverberates throughout the world, we at HRN are especially concerned about how coronavirus will impact our food system. We will use our platform to support the restaurant, agriculture, hospitality, and other food-related industries by maintaining our coverage and operations. As social distancing becomes the temporary norm, podcasts are more important than ever. There's never been a more crucial time to stay informed about the state of our food system and the ways that food connects our global community. We're sharing all of our COVID-19 coverage at heritageradionetwork.org/COVID-19, from interviews with nonprofit leaders and journalists, to firsthand accounts from chefs and restaurant owners, to reports on how this crisis is affecting regional farms. Our team is working remotely from all over to keep Food Radio alive. HRN needs your support more than ever to keep sharing essential stories and resources with our listeners. Make a donation of any amount. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
This episode is brought to you by Square. If you run a restaurant or business, Square has the tools to help you stay connected to your customers, shift your business, and navigate this uniquely challenging time. Learn more at square.com/go/yfood. Hello and welcome to another episode of Why Food, a podcast about entrepreneurs, innovators, and career changers. This week we are joined, I should say rejoined, because she's been on the podcast before and we're really excited to have her back, by Rochelle Oliver, who is the founder and editor of islandandspice.com. Rochelle, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me again. It's really nice to be back in the room, you guys, or, you know, kind of.
The virtual room.
Rochelle, a lot has changed since we last had you on the podcast. For one, you were nominated for an IACP award. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so excited to have that nomination. It was, I was so nervous the day that the nominations were being announced. I don't know if you remember this, but I just I'm cooking buttermilk fried chicken. I don't know why, but I was I'm doing this to distract myself.
I actually do remember that. And I think that at a time literally today, this week, this year, it's really being highlighted the importance of having that editorial control, having a safe space, and just having, you know, your own space to tell stories, which is what you've done through Island and Spice. Mm-hmm. And again, this week, that's really being highlighted when you look at the news and you look at the stories coming out in food media, starting with Bon Appetit, but I don't think it's going to end there. So why don't you tell us a little bit, because you do have a background in traditional media. You were an editor with the New York Times. I know we touched upon this last time, but give us a brief little intro about why it is that you want to start islandandspice.com, and then specifically this new column that you have that's called Strained, that kind of tackles those difficult subjects of race and food.
Yeah, so Strained is, like you said, well, Island and Spice, first of all, it's our online publication, islandandspice.com, and it focuses on food, culture, and the Caribbean. And it's this place where we're really bringing about these amazing voices and being able to talk about food in a way that is not niche, right? And so one of these things I keep, the phrase I keep being telling people is Black is not niche, you know? And Caribbean food and our experiences, they're not niche. And so what's amazing, and one of the things that when anybody comes to work with Island and Spice, what they notice is that they have this freedom to be themselves. And there is so much power, and it comes through in our storytelling, when someone can just take a breath and talk the way that they talk and be who they are, cook the way that they cook. And when you're not trying to, copy edit, your voice for a certain audience. And just saying, hey, I'm here. This is my, you know, my plantain, my porridge, my, you know, whatever that is. You know, through the stories that we tell, there's even moments where I actually have to remind the chef and remind the writer, it's okay to speak in Spanish right now. That's okay. It's okay to say pastelito instead of, you know, it's kind of like an empanada. You know, like if this is the way you speak, then say that.
Right. And
yeah,
and
so I think that's why I think the world needs a place like that. The world needs a place where people can actually just be themselves. And I think in areas where people have been, for no reason, really, meaning there's no reason for it today to be marginalized or just say, hey, you know, your voice isn't really relevant. That's not true, because especially when it comes to food, we all can relate to that. We all can understand who we are and how we're different. And hey, it's not necessarily my type of cooking, but man, it tastes good. And so, and it matters, right? So that is,
right.
I think the power of what Island and Spice is, and I think that, you know, and I instead of saying what other publications aren't, because the truth is, like, I don't need to say that, you know, I don't need to say the sky is blue. I don't need to say, you know, I don't need to say that. We know that. I think what we need more of is showing how they're pointing people toward conversations and publications that show what equity in action looks like. If we are all equal, if we are giving attention to our stories with equal weight, this is what that storytelling would look like. And so that's, I think I'm just really excited that people are starting to ask those questions and also look for answers. So I started just, you know, going on a whole riff there, but.
I want to highlight something you said. You said, like Caribbean is not niche, Black is not niche. And I think that is something that there has been a lot of kind of pushback on and struggle to like assert your identity like within the food media space, like as a whole person. And to me, that's like the heart of what the Black Lives Matter movement is about. Is it about police brutality? Yes. But I think the bigger picture is it's about seeing the humanity in Black lives and seeing us as whole people. And if you see us as whole people, then it's not going to be niche. It's not going to be the tokenization. It's not going to be something where someone isn't afraid to express every part of who they are, whether that's the Caribbean part and the Spanish speaking part and all of those. So I think you're also really speaking, Rochelle, to the importance of having a Black editor or having an editor who is going to encourage writers to, as you said, just be themselves, because that's what we want as readers and consumers. It comes across different when someone is being their the most true form of themselves versus being this kind of glossed over to make mainstream acceptable version of themselves.
Yeah. There's so much to unpack, right? In terms of, you know, we start talking about what Black Lives Matters means. I mean, I think it's obvious for Black lives, right? we want to show the humanity of it all, but you know, there's this other side where, you know, when I don't have to prove that I'm a human, and I don't have to prove that my voice matters. I, you know, there's this other layer where it really is just a reckoning for people to just say, I need to understand, like some, you know, people need to understand why they don't feel someone deserves the same platform or the same voice, or that their voice doesn't matter as much. And so I struggle with that. And I think those are some of the questions that, as an editor, I have to challenge myself every day, because when you're not used to being heard, there's this knee-jerk reaction to say, I want to prove to you that my voice matters. And so I don't need to prove that the stories that we're telling matter. They simply matter because they do. And so it's this, you know, I can just exist as I am, and I allowing those readers to, here's the thing. So we launched Strained this week, and Strained is the column about where we let Caribbean Americans tell their stories about their food legacies and how they've been interrupted. The feedback we've gotten has been amazing. I mean, there's people all over the world. I counted today, more than 80 people came in to our site, and that was just 80 countries, sorry, 80 countries came in to just check out the Strain column yesterday. I think it was like 83 countries, which was like the highest one day number of people from all over the world tuning in. And the emails that I was getting was like, this is really refreshing. That was the word. This is so refreshing to hear these stories told this way. And what they mean is, like, it was just refreshing to see people of color talk about their food without having to speak to a white audience specifically. Like, it's not geared to my white readers. And it's giving the same respect that you would give other stories. So just, you know, for example, the Strain column launched with a wonderful, it was called Chopsticks, Forks, and Knives, The Inequity at My Dinner Table. And it's this story written by Paula Madison, who is a former media executive and very intelligent woman. And she wrote about growing up in Harlem as a 10-year-old girl in the 1960s. And what was so challenging for her is that she was trying to navigate race, culture, class, and identity in a way that I think was very unique to her. She's Chinese, she's Black, she's Jamaican, and she was born in America. And so, you know, having to try to navigate all of these like cultural, you know, subtleties and sometimes not so subtle, these conflicts that was happening like right in her back door. You know, in the 1960s, there was Malcolm X was assassinated. There were riots breaking out right in her backyard, and just trying to figure out how to navigate that wasn't easy. And so she talks about all of these complexities through flatware. Right, you know, and how she had to, you know, even pay attention to how she ate, because if she ate the British style, which is how her parents taught her, which is came from the legacy of, you know, her Jamaican heritage, she would get made fun of, or it could possibly be a conflict. She could literally get into a fight because people would make fun of her. And then she couldn't use chopsticks, even though she knew how to use chopsticks. She was a Black kid using chopsticks, so they would make fun of her. And so it's just really amazing to navigate these very complex issues that I think having someone talk to a Black editor about this, especially an editor who has, you know, very mixed heritage, I understand that, and I understand how important this dilemma was for her and how much it mattered. And that's the importance of having, so why do we need people of color in these positions? Because they understand that chopsticks, forks and knives, yeah, even that can be a major cultural conflict for lots of people, actually, for millions of people that go through this. But if you don't have that upbringing, then you might look at this story and just cast it aside and say, I don't think people really care about chopsticks, forks, and knives. But I get it. I get how deep this issue was for her as a 10-year-old. And it wasn't something where she wasn't victimized by. She wasn't held captive by her community. She actually was very aware of the race relations and found a way to be empowered as a young girl and a way to kind of take control of her own narrative. And so this is what the column is about. And I think that when you have more people of color, Black people, and, you know, just diversity, they can understand that and really give strength to people who are really just being kind of cast aside at the moment.
What inspired you to launch the Strained column? What were you looking to add to the site that wasn't there already?
It was really important to bring in more voices and to show that, you know, when it comes to food and how important food is to who we are and our cultural identity. I think everyone should have access to like raising their voice. I don't think it's just exclusive to chefs and you know, people who cook. I think the stories that we're telling, yes, we're looking at them through the lens of food, but we're just looking at like humanity and vulnerability and overcoming challenges and connection. And being able to look at through food, I think, is just a very, it's just more accessible and it's more intriguing. And I think it's also a little, it kind of just like, I think everyone puts their guard down when we're talking about food. And so we can really have complex conversations in a way that I think would be hard to talk about. Or even like maybe redundant. And so it's a refreshing way to talk about complex issues. And so what inspired me to create Strained, I almost feel like, well, my life has inspired me. I grew up, you know, Jamaican. I'm an immigrant to this country. I was born in Greece. And so I have an amazing Greek god family that I try to visit as much as possible. And a part of my family is Chinese. A part of my family is Indian. And so from India. And I'm not alone in that. And so it was, you know, two things. It was trying to find a way to give more people access to telling their stories. And the stories that I knew are a part of so many Caribbean American folks. And the truth is, it's part of every, you know, person's narrative. But being able to see it through this perspective is really important. I guess that's part of it. Inspiration, I think, comes from within. And I knew people had these stories that they wanted to tell just as badly as I did.
Okay, so we're just going to pause and take a quick break, and we will be right back to hear more from Rochelle Oliver.
This episode is brought to you by Square. We all know that this is an incredibly challenging time for those of us running restaurants and small food businesses. With social distancing in place, people are staying home and eating in, which means the way they shop for food is changing. I've seen the shift happen at Burlap and Barrel, the single origin spice company that I founded with my friend Ori Zohar. Because we have an online store and we can ship orders, it's a safe and healthy way for home cooks to get spices delivered right to their doors. Now people are more curious than ever about the ethics and sustainability around food, and it's a great opportunity for us to talk about Burlap and Barrel's social mission while growing our business so that we can continue to support our partner farmers around the world. If you run a restaurant, farm, or other small food business, Square has the tools to help you adapt. One of these tools is Square Online Store. It lets you set up a free online ordering page with curbside pickup and local delivery so you can keep your customers safe. You can deliver orders yourself or integrate with delivery partners. Its order hub lets you manage all of your incoming orders in one place, no matter which delivery partners you choose to use. Square has all the tools to help you stay connected to customers no matter where they are. See everything that's available by visiting square.com/go/yfood.
And we're back with Rochelle Oliver, the founder and editor of islandandspice.com. And she just launched a new column called Strain, where different writers, they write personal essays exploring the connection between race and food. Rochelle, you were just mentioning how the inspiration for this column comes from within, and how that particular insight, your multicultural background and heritage as an editor, enables you to kind of see stories through a different lens. Can you talk to us a little bit more about the editing side? Because we often have a lot of guests who are writers, but I think the editing side, we don't really get to explore that much. Let me phrase it differently, Rochelle. What makes a good editor? Because I think this past week, we've seen what makes maybe a tone-deaf editor, let's say that. What makes a good editor?
I think I value a great editor is someone who can help the writer become a better version of themselves. And I think the way that they do that is by really listening to that writer and understand what is it that they're trying to do? Where is it that they're trying to take the story, and how can I help them get there? And I think, I mean, that is what I try to do every day when I'm working on a piece with a writer. That's my goal. And sometimes you see them, the writer, they just need a little push in the right direction. It's kind of, if you've anyone's been in sports, I think a good editor is like a good coach. You know, you shouldn't be really like knocking down anyone's confidence and saying, this isn't good. An editor is a great coach. How can I help you get there? And sometimes an editor needs to be a little tough. But honestly, you should be a great listener, because you need to understand sometimes what they're not saying, what the writer's not saying. You should have to be able to kind of identify if the writer is spending too much time in an area that is just a waste of their time. And then there's the other element where you just have to trust your writer at the end of the day. It's a relationship between two people working on what I kind of think is a very vulnerable process, writing. Because there's really like no right or wrong way to do it, right? But it's a matter of like, what's the goal? Where are we going with that? And how can we make this like the best damn product available. And to me, that's what an editor is. I'm sure if you go to some school or read some book, they'll say, here are the 10 things you need to know. But I think there's art and science, and a lot of great work is discovered in the art of it and not in the science.
Hmm. I think one of the things that has been really interesting that we've seen come to a head in the last week or two, I mean, building on trends that have existed for a long time, is the conflict between the financial motivations of food media and the artistic motivations, or the sort of aspirations to tell interesting, diverse, complicated stories. And so I wanted to ask, from your perspective as not just an editor, but also as an entrepreneur, how have you folded that into everything that you do at Island & Spice?
So it's like the financial obligations, which is often like quantity, and I imagine, and like a sure bet versus taking a chance and trying something new and different. Is that, that's what we're saying, right?
Well, I guess, I mean, I think one of the things that sort of jumped out in all of the coverage of everything that happened at Bon App, which I know is not, you haven't worked there, and I'm not asking you to speak specifically to that publication, but one of the conflicts that seems to have emerged or seems to have existed there for a long time was that they were producing primarily content primarily for white audiences and were avoiding discussing recipes, food traditions from everybody else because they didn't feel like their audiences would be willing to pay for it. And so I'm interested in your thoughts on how you've navigated that as an entrepreneur with Island & Spice and how you've built out sort of food media, food content, food, how you've encouraged writers to tell food stories that go in other directions or that may introduce an audience to a food or a tradition that they weren't familiar with before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And can I just add one more thing to what Ethan said? I think also one of the issues wasn't just promoting, you know, a more mainstream type of cuisine. It was when other cultural cuisines were presented, it was presented through the lens of a white person that didn't have a connection to that cuisine. Or it was presented by the people of color within the publication, but they were essentially, or at least it was stated in the articles I've been reading, that they felt pigeonholed to only create recipes within that small amount of space of their cultural background.
Yeah. So I will. So, okay. So we're talking about how people of color or stories that have to do with non-mainstream food don't get equal play or might be intentionally being suppressed. I said earlier, there's really no point in me talking about this, that the sky is blue. But what I can talk about, and like I said, I have not worked at Bon Appetit, so I don't really feel like, more than anything, I don't feel like I'm the person who should be lending like a voice to that. There are so many other amazing people in the food industry who are probably more deserving of answering that question of what happened there. And I encourage everyone to, speak to them about that. But I want to talk about how, in terms of the Island & Spice and the industry and seeing the food as niche, it's, the international cuisine is a multi-billion dollar industry. There's more international cuisines than there are like mainstream cuisines, surprisingly. And so, by talking about food, and we're talking about the time of the internet, right? And so we're looking at global audiences. It only makes sense, especially financially, to be looking at stories that speak to all English speaking audiences if we just want to segment the English speaking audience. At the New York Times, we branched out as a company to really put resources behind the international and multilingual storytelling. And while I was there, I had a great opportunity to say this story. As an editor, I was empowered to say, you know what, this story needs to also be written in, you know, another language. Can we get this written in Spanish or Mandarin? I worked on stories that were translated into Arabic. And we also had to follow through with the social media of that. And so these are, you know, if the question is about who's interested, that's not, if you're looking at your audience and you're looking at growth and business, then the whole world is interested. If you're saying, what am I interested in? Then that's a much smaller scale and much smaller dollars. The reason I started Island and Spice is because I was very aware of what you're talking about. And I wanted to, you know, by saying no to one writer, you're also saying no to an entire community of chefs and the people they feed. You're saying no to millions of people by saying no to that one writer. I dare anybody to look at another publication or any publication and see another publication talk about Rastafarian Italian cooking, or a story that looks at, you know, Nina Compton and how she brings Caribbean rum into her kitchen. Yeah, a lot of people have talked about Nina Compton, but never from the perspective of her identity, which is Caribbean, and how she brings that into her kitchen. And, you know, I dare anybody to find a publication that has talked about, you know, Jason Howard, a chef who completely threw black pepper out of his kitchen and exclusively chose to hone the power of Scotch bonnet peppers, with the same respect that has given to mainstream chefs or those chefs who lack the golden goose of having friends in high places. I mean, honestly, anybody who's looking right now can Google and they will not find a story that looks at these chefs. I mean, Nina Compton, yes, there's many stories, but not from the Caribbean rum perspective. And these are just three examples where I saw them. We saw these chefs from all parts of the world, Jamaica, St. Lucia, New York, Barbados, London. That's just three people who encompass these amazing worlds. And we spoke with them and about them and gave them the same platform that you would see in the New York Times, you would see at any other publication, or actually, no, let me change that. We gave them the same respect and quality journalism that you should see at other publications. The same attention and quality of journalism that is afforded by the best of them in the industry, that's what is at the core of what Island and Spice does. And I'm so excited when some of these chefs or cookbook authors actually can take these pieces and take it out into the world. And they've been able to use this to move themselves ahead and to share their work and to be magnified and get investors to invest in them. And so, you know, the question isn't just, this isn't just about like what's happening now, right? It's really about, I think, what people like myself are doing to change. I mean, this is change in action. This is equity in action. This is my movement. And it is not easy. I didn't do it because it was a smart move. I did it because it was the right thing to do. Launching your own business is a painstaking process. It is scary. It is, you know, walking into the unknown every day. It was definitely a risk move, coming out of the New York Times. I had a lot of job offers ahead in front of me, a lot of interviews, and I felt like this was the right thing to do. Once I started like looking at how many people, and going back to the numbers, I didn't do this because, hey, it was just a heartfelt thing. This wasn't a passion project. When you look at the numbers and you see that this is a multi-billion-dollar industry, it's kind of like, well, why, how come no one's doing this? And the reason no one's doing this is because, you know, I guess Black lives didn't matter.
Do you have any pieces of advice or suggestions for other people thinking about starting their own publications, whether something as simple as a blog or trying to build out like what you've done into a much bigger publication?
Honestly, when anybody ever asks me that question, like, oh, how can I do what you did? I'm always just say, like, just don't. Because, like I said, it's not the smart thing to do. It's not easy. You got to have a stomach for it. I think that people should just, you just have to, like, know who you are and what matters and make the change that I think you can be the change you want to see. I really believe in that. This is Why Food, and it's like, oh, people want advice. I just really believe in be the change you want to see. I've been doing journalism for, like, I don't know, like 15 plus years, 20 years or something like that. So this wasn't like, I this is something that I can do, right? So I think people should be the change that they want to see. In terms of if people do want to get their foot in the door, or there are chefs out there who, and writers, food writers, I mean, hey, like, let me put this out there. We are hiring. So if you have a food story that you want to share, we were launching with the Strain column as a great way to give people the opportunity to share stories, their food stories with us, and be vulnerable, be honest, and be yourself. And, you know, we do pay. So what we can pay. And, it's competitive. Now I'm going on my whole, like, hey, we're hiring. Hey, anybody who wants to submit and contribute to Strain, please do. But, yeah, I mean, there's great sponsor photographers, copy editors, and it's a tough question, right, Ethan? What can people do to be the change? I wish I could say, hey, go apply to this, publication, or go to this company and write about great stories, and your editor is going to understand where you're coming from. But there isn't. I have to be honest. There that publication is, there aren't many of them. And it might be off the beaten path. And so that is why I am saying we're hiring. We're always looking for great, great people, because if these are the stories you want to tell, then, Island and Spice is a great place to go to tell those stories. And I'm looking forward to the day where, there are more places to do that. But it's hard. I mean, we need like major, the change needs to be, pretty significant.
And I love what you said about how you pay your contributors, because yeah. I think that is just really important. And that's another thing that I think our industry has been coming to terms yeah. with. This idea of what you call equity in action, which I think is a great kind of overarching term, and what that looks like. And I think any profit generating model should be should not necessarily be asking for volunteers to help them build profit. So
yes, here's my stance on that. I can't have a publication and say I value voices. I value these stories and not value the writers. That cannot exist. You have to value everyone along that process. Otherwise, you're just blowing hot air. And so, yeah, our rates are competitive with, honestly, and this is really important, and I'm happy you brought it back to that. Our rates are competitive with basically like the rest of the industry. So, or like the best of the industry, actually. And yeah, I mean, I'm really proud of that. And that's one of the things, like, why do we have a small quarterly publication? It's small because it's built with people in mind. We want to, in order to pay people fairly, we need to not throw out, like, you know, how many pieces of content. It's a balance, and it's about giving the stories the quality attention, the writers the quality attention, taking time to really think about what we're saying. Are we using the right words? Are we setting the right tone? Is any group feeling like an outsider? Because if someone comes to the publication, any publication, and feels like an outsider, then that publication failed its mission. I don't care which publication it is. Especially if we're talking about food, because it should never be. Food is about coming together. Food is intimate. It's vulnerable. I said this before, I'll say it again. The first food we have as human beings is from your mother's breast. There's nothing more intimate than food. And so we have to treat our art and our craft with respect and understanding. And people cannot be left out of that conversation. And pay is one of the clearest ways you can kind of show people that, yeah, I actually do care. You know, through and through, I actually care about your contribution.
No, I think that's such a great point, and I think that's a good place for us to kind of wrap things up. I love what you said, like, especially food. If food isn't inclusive, I mean, it doesn't even make sense about what food is. So, Rochelle, can you tell our listeners where they can find you and where they can read, not just Island and Spice, but the new column, Strained?
Oh, thank you. Yes. So, go to islandandspice.com and subscribe. Please subscribe also. And you'll find the Strained column there. We are hosting an event next Thursday where it's actually a sit down with Paula Madison to talk about her column, Chopsticks, Forks, and Knives, The Inequality at My Dinner Table. And we're going to have a very open conversation about race, culture, class, and equity. And she's going to be also talking about some of the things that she'd like to see when it comes to Chinese and African Americans coming together and really supporting each other through this time, and which is really great because she's a wonderful person to speak about how to bring communities and places together. So yeah, go to islandandspice.com. You can RSVP to the event and subscribe.
Wonderful. Thank you guys so much for listening to this week's episode of Why Food. And we will be back next week, as long as the world is still standing. So you guys can always find us on social at Why Food Podcast, or you can shoot us an email, whyfoodpodcast@gmail.com. You can find me on social at Foodie in New York. And you can find Ethan on social at Burlap and Barrel. I know he was having some technical difficulties. So we will see you guys next week. Bye.
Why Food is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.